You are listening to KBBI AM 890 Homer, and you're listening to The Coffee Table. I'm your host, Aaron Bolton, and I'm joined in the studio by Homer City Council members Donna Adderhold and Heath Smith. Both are running unopposed for their second terms. Good morning to you both. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Good morning.
And I just wanted to start by letting you both introduce yourselves, if you both want to explain why you guys decided to run for a second term, and whoever, in no particular order, whoever wants to go first. Go ahead, Heath.
Very good. Well, I have had a great experience over the last 3 years representing the community of Homer, and it hasn't come with some growing pains, but it's been wonderful interacting with the public and coming to a better understanding really of what it's about to help run a government. It's pretty complex and there's a lot of moving parts, and so I have a much greater appreciation for what it takes to kind of pull that off. I didn't really make my decision until later in the decision process because I really wanted to be able to be committed to the time that it really took to be effective and be truly representative if I were to be voted in again. And so I'm just grateful for the opportunity, and I think there's a lot of wonderful, meaningful things yet to be accomplished, and so I look forward to that.
All right, Donna?
Oh, lots of reasons, but I guess what I'll focus on in terms of why I decided to run again is just the realization that everybody sitting on council today is a first-term council member, and of course that's the way it's set up. We have three-year terms so that the voters can decide every 3 years, but I really felt like a little bit of longevity is good, and so giving voters the choice of someone who has at least been on council for one term to have that a little bit of institutional knowledge. And so that was one of the main reasons. And also, as Heath said, there's a lot to do. And once you gain some experience on, how it works, it's valuable. And I have some additional work I'd like to do.
Okay. And I just want to remind listeners, if you have a question, you can call in at 235-7721. You can also email info@kbbi.org. And if you are emailing your question, please include your name so we know who is asking the question. And you can call in whenever you like, but I would like to save some questions for later in the show. But I wanted to start with, you guys both talked about what the council has accomplished during your first terms, and most notably the police station recently went through, and that was a big accomplishment. The Grantland Street extension just went through. The fire station was remodeled. Are there other accomplishments that have been taken on and saw through over the past 3 years? I guess what else has the city council accomplished in your guys' time that you're really kind of proud of? Whoever wants to go.
I'll start. I actually kind of put together a list of the things that that I've sponsored or that I've accomplished that have passed. And one of the things that I'll start off with is that we established an Americans with Disabilities Act Compliance Committee, and I am the council representative on that. And that experience has been really enriching and valuable to me. And one of the things that I'm looking forward to doing is, in this next term, is completing the transition plan that we've been working on for the last year and a half or so, and then. Helping move those things forward, the areas within the city within city buildings that require upgrade to meet ADA code. I've really gained a lot of understanding of what the barriers are to people with disabilities that I do not experience. I think some of the other things that I've been really proud of bringing forward and very happy that council passed was how we move forward with ethics complaints and appeals from Planning Commission decisions. Those used to come to council as the Board of Adjustment or the Board of Ethics. And we now pass those to a hearing officer. And the hearing officer is somebody who is trained in the law and understands that judicial process much better than council members and can be, I believe, can be perceived to have a more neutral approach in deliberating those decisions. So I'm glad that we have that process in place now. I've also worked on strengthening the City of Homer's ethics codes.
Okay, and Heath, are there things outside of just the kind of, I know you had a huge hand in the police station in pushing that through, but are there other things aside from the police station that, you know, that have been pretty tricky for the council to take on?
Well, you know, it doesn't always take tricky. It just takes, you know, some work. And, you know, I worked together with Deb Lowney in putting together the funding from the Heart Fund Trail part to get that Hornaday Trail put in. And, you know, great kudos to that group that dedicated a lot of volunteer time in getting that. It came in at a really reduced cost and was a huge benefit to the park users and the community as a whole. Also worked together with David Lewis in putting together a funding mechanism to help the Spark kind of increase their footprint and put a much larger facility on the ground so that that could in turn again, you know, benefit the community as a whole. So I'm proud of those things, but at the end of the day, I'm only one vote and it takes the council to really get that work done. So I'm not going to take any personal credit for anything just because I know that the council at the end of the day gets to make that decision. The other thing was that I worked with the Port and Harbor to help increase some revenue out there through some parking fees that were instituted. And that's something that they've been really intent on in growing their infrastructure and what they're able to do out there. So those are a couple of things off the top of my head.
Okay. And you both mentioned, you know, as far as running for a second term, that there's a lot left to do. And you guys just recently passed the capital improvement plan. Capital improvements seem to kind of always be, you know, on top of the list as far as the council's agenda. You know, whoever wants to take it, what are you guys looking forward to as far as a second term? You're both running unopposed. So, yeah, what are you guys looking forward to taking on in the next term? Do you want to go ahead, Donna?
Sure, I'll go ahead. You know, we have one of the things that I'll say is that we have the HERC task force in place, and we just had a work session, a really, I thought, very productive work session with them on Monday. I'm so blown away by how much work that group is putting into what we've asked them to do. And so they're going to come back to us with a recommendation, and we have this aging building that we're paying to keep in warm status and can only use a small portion of that building at this time. So I'm really looking forward to what they come back with and then trying to figure out how we can do something with that facility that meets a community need and want, you know, without increasing the cost to the city, which is going to be a really tall order. That's going to be a really tricky one, I think, to work through. But that building has been in that status for long enough, and we need to do something. And then again, as I said earlier, I'm looking forward to completing the transition plan with the ADA compliance committee and kind of working through some of those issues to bring the city more in compliance with ADA.
Okay, Heath?
Well, the HERC building is an obvious thing of great interest to the community, and there's a lot that needs to play out there. So I give kudos to the mayor for putting together what looks like a really good team to kind of take that on. So I was impressed with their findings as well. But the East Boat Harbor expansion, I think, is critical. And it's kind of a long-term, grinded out. It's going to take a lot to get there, but we cannot deviate our focus from that. So with the police station kind of in pocket, There's still work to do there, and I'm very interested in the process and helping make sure that we're going to get, that the public's going to get their say in how that plays out, because, you know, $7.5 million of theirs needs to be spent right, and it needs to be well represented. So I'm interested in seeing that through, but kind of shifting gears into seeing how we as council members can really play a larger role and what we can do in helping achieve the goals out there at the Port and Harbor is going to be key.
Yeah, on the harbor expansion, the city just started moving forward with the Army Corps of Engineers to do a feasibility study. That same study had been done in the past, and it didn't show that the numbers really penciled out as far as being feasible. Do you expect that it'll play out differently this time, or are we going to have to kind of wait and see?
Well, we scored a little low, and I think, you know, things have changed out there, and. Brian has done his homework, and I trust that he has put together a plan that's going to help that score higher on that matrix. So that, again, we're leaving in the hands of the professionals, but we'll see.
And Donnie, you had something to add?
Yeah, I do. Well, I have the benefit of, since I'm acting as mayor pro tem at this time, I was able to sit in on a portion of a meeting yesterday with the Corps of Engineers, with the folks who are actually going to be doing the analysis for the cost-benefit analysis is what they're doing at this time, and kind of having a dialogue with them. And there were other people who were in the room who really added to that discussion, including Kate Mitchell, representing the Marine Trades Association, and just her history and her knowledge of how the harbor has gone from a ditch to what it is today and what it needs to be in the future. The core people were taking a few notes while she was talking, which was great to see. So I think that things have changed. A number of things have changed, and I think our need has definitely increased. And, you know, the Corps also took a tour of the System 5 float while before I arrived, and we're able to see, you know, the boats rafted out there. And, you know, we talked about some of the large vessels that that ground in the harbor or ground in the entrance to the harbor, and the wait times. We talked about some of the wait times. And the fact that the Seldovia Ferry has to adjust its schedule on extreme low tides because they can't get into the harbor. So there's a number of factors like that that I think weigh into it.
Yeah, and you know, and I know that it's going to take, the study is expected to be completed next spring, and we'll just kind of have to wait and see what it bears out. But if the study indicates that the expansion is not really economically feasible, is this project dead in the water at that time? Or is this something that the city should continue working towards and keeping an eye towards? Go ahead, Donna.
I think, this would be, you know, to help it become a core project that would receive some federal funding. It's going to require work. You know, there's certainly going to need to be match from the city. Hopefully we could get some support from the state. It would be really difficult for the city to do this on its own without the support of the Corps.
And Heath, did you have something to add?
Well,
to that?
It would be impossible for the city to do it without help from the Corps. And that's why getting the Corps and going through this process is critical to us getting the funding through the federal government. So I think that I'm really optimistic with what's happened and where we're at positional-wise in achieving our goal. So I'm going to stay positive. I'm not thinking about option B.
Okay. And, you know, in terms of, out there in the spit, I also want to talk a little bit about the large vessel haul out. There has been some question whether there's enough demand for boat work that can't already be done in town. Do you think the city should be moving forward with that project? Is it a risk that the demand isn't there to utilize that infrastructure that the city would be in turn kind of providing?
Well, I think, this has been on the list for the Port and Harbor Commission for a long time, and for good reason. I mean, we have a number of larger vessels that go to Seward and other ports that pull out and spend a lot of money and create a separation for their families over the winter that that could be avoided. Now, whether we have enough boats here or not, I don't know if I know the answer to that question, but I know that it might even become a port where instead of people going to Seward, they'd come here. And so if you don't have the infrastructure and the facilities to kind of accommodate that, then you don't really know what the market is at the end of the day.
Well, I'll say there's kind of two projects. There's the large vessel haul out, which is partially in existence. And, you know, I think you'll most people probably noticed that as soon as the RVs drove off the spit, there were vessels being hauled out. And I think there's three vessels there right now. So it's being, that is being utilized, and there's plans to improve that facility, improve the technical capabilities out there. There's also another project that we added to the capital improvement plan this year, which would basically be a lift for larger vessels. And it would be a lift that does not exist in Homer right now. And whether that pencils out is still to be determined. But I believe that the Port and Harbor Commission is bringing that forward because they're identifying it as a need that does not compete with the marine trades that exist here, but would enhance the ability to do work here. And so if that does pencil out and could be built, I think it would be beneficial.
Okay. And and I see that the harbor expansion that is now moved to the top of the list. But you know, and again, like you mentioned, that it just the city feasibly can't do it by itself. Is that still a long term project, or if the feasibility study in the spring pencils out, do you think how quickly could that project realistically move? How fast could that before some action could be taken?
That's a really good question. I don't know how all those steps play out on a timeline. So that's above my pay grade.
Well, it definitely would be years. The city manager is thinking, you know, 20 years. whether it's that or not, the Corps of Engineers yesterday was indicating that they have been shortening the timeline for their studies, preliminary studies to move a project forward. But you know, there's a lot of things in play. So the likelihood that that Heath and I are on council at that time is relatively low. But you know, there will be certainly steps and decisions along the way that will need to be made by council to keep that project moving forward.
Okay, and I want to remind listeners, if you have a question, you can call in at 235-7721. Again, 235-7721. You can also email info@kbbi.org. And again, if you're emailing, please include your name so we know who is asking the question. And you both of you, you know, mentioned the HERC, and I did want to talk about that a little bit more. You know, and you guys had a work session on Monday. Are you guys leaning towards a direction that you would like to see that issue go? I mean, how would you like to what would you like to see happen with the building? Is there a general idea at this point, or are we still, is it too preliminary?
You know, I don't want to say because I think that any direction that it goes to the HERC task force needs to come from council as a whole. And we gave them some additional guidance during the work session based on some general consensus that we had. And I'm very interested in seeing what they come back with. They're digging into things that much deeper than I anticipated that they would. And so I think that the recommendations that they bring back to us are going to be very well educated recommendations. I'm just going to wait and see what they come back with.
Well, that would have been close to my answer. So this is the reason we put a task force on the ground is to kind of bring back some recommendations, flush out some good information. And I'm confident, as is Donna, that they're they're going well above and beyond what we ever hoped. So I'm interested in seeing what they bring to us.
Yeah, in the document that the task force passed on the council on Monday, they did suggest that the building can be used in some capacity for like the next 3 to 5 years, but beyond that, it'll either need some significant repairs or to be demolished. I mean, does that give the council enough time to find a new use for the building, or or does that time frame make it more likely the building may need to be torn down, and then the property itself might need to be reevaluated as far as what to do with it? It just seems like a somewhat of a short timeline, especially as task forces go in the decision making process, and then whatever the decision might be. If that requires funding of some sort, things don't move off the capital improvement list that quickly. Whoever wants to.
Well, I mean, obviously, if the funding's available to do something, the numbers that they provided us were not very compelling to lead me to believe that we were going to have the ability to do any major remodel there. But I think there's other players in the community that are interested in trying to get involved. So the P3, the public-private partnership model, is probably the most, in my mind, compelling option in order for the longevity of that building to continue. We'll see how that plays out and if there's any interested parties, but I don't know. They also indicated in their report that there wasn't a whole lot of public support for saying, hey, we're willing to pay more in order to keep that building up and going or remodel or whatever it is. So it'll be interesting what they come back to us with. But 3 years, I mean, it doesn't mean that we couldn't find some money to fix something that would stretch it out another 3 years. So I think there's some intermittent things that, as long as it doesn't become a money cesspool, that it might be able to continue to be used in its current form for a little longer.
Donna, do you have anything to add to that? Or?
That's pretty much what I would have answered.
Yeah, and they did come with some preliminary numbers. And as far as you mentioned other players, Fireweed Academy has expressed interest in the building. Others have expressed interest as an after-school facility, maybe a Boys and Girls Club, Recreation Center. And Heath, you indicated that, they said it could cost upwards of $5 million to renovate the building, depending on the use. Do you think and maybe Donna, if you want to touch on that, do you think the private public-private partnership might be the most viable option? It doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of support for another bond proposition for any kind of building.
Yeah, I'm really interested. That's one of the directions that we kind of had consensus on to ask the task force to dig a little deeper into. And there's public-private partnerships take on many forms, and so I'm interested in their exploration of that, what the viability is and what it would look like. So I'm just gonna kind of hang back and and wait, but I don't think that the residents are interested in any kind of increased tax to pay for this building at this point. So we're going to have to come up with some creative things to do. And this is one of them.
Right. And the task force did suggest, did indicate that demolishing the building would cost about $1 million roughly. It could go up depending on unforeseen costs such as fuel spills or other issues, but that would be a significantly cheaper option and could give the council more time to contemplate the future of the property and maybe wait until such a time that a new building might be viable. I mean, do you think that's a viable option given the time frame? I know, Heath, you indicated that there could be some possibility to extend the life of the building, but might that give the council more time to kind of contemplate things?
Well, I am not for the demolition of the buildings at this point because they're both currently being used, and the displacement of either one of those groups has not been determined as far as being able to, whether it's the Public Works Maintenance Building or department that's using HERC 2, I mean, they're currently in there using that space, and then there's all the recreationalists that are using HERC 1. So, you know, demolishing those now when there's still a useful life that has been determined, I don't know that we really gain anything. But we would also have to consider what we're displacing at the same time before we really look at that option.
And I will just add, I think there needs to be a plan. You know, there needs to be a plan forward. What are we doing and to what end? And, you know, so we kind of need to work, what does the community need? And then kind of work backwards from there, how we're going to get to that. And, the possible demolition of that building comes into play in that chain of decision making.
Okay. And we did get a question in. And it says, a longtime local has seen sandblasting of boat holes and wants to know where does the residue end up. I don't know if that's a answer you guys may have. That might almost be a better question for the Port and Harbor Office. But
well, the project does have a stormwater pollution prevention plan in place there, and you will notice that there are mats that are put down underneath the vessels. But it's still, you know, when we have a deluge like we did on Monday, you know, all that gets washed off. So that is an issue of mine, is making sure that we're not contaminating the environment there.
Okay. And I did want to talk a little bit about the budget that'll be coming up here soon. In the council is going to have to grapple with roughly $1.2 million budget gap this year. Voters did approve a deferment of a 0.75% sales tax used for road and trail construction 3 years ago, and that's set to expire in December. Do you guys have any ideas at this time of how the city could handle the budget gap?
Well, we haven't been proposed. We don't even have a draft budget yet. So Katie knows what she's doing with the numbers. And when the voters voted to incorporate the road and trail maintenance into the HART funds, that money's going back, but then they voted to allow certain parts that were covered under the general fund to be covered with the HART. So I don't know that we're facing much of a gap this year.
Yeah, and the city manager has been working with each of the departments to develop the annual budget for 2019 with the knowledge of that gap. So I believe that we will be presented with a balanced budget. It's just a matter of what will be lean this year. And but I think that the departments are working on that themselves, on what they can do without in the coming year.
Right. And I know that the proposition last year did, it was estimated it would solve roughly half of that gap, although there were some, financial decisions made in terms of the police station. I know that kind of reduced some of those savings, I believe, unless more money was added to that project from the city. But, Donna, you indicated that it sounds like, you guys will likely be presented with a balanced budget, and most of that might be done through cuts. Do you think the city could afford, city services could be afforded to be cut back, or even departments could be afforded to be cut back, or should the council be looking towards mitigating some of those cuts?
The city is very lean right now. There's really not much more to cut. In fact, we have needs for additional staff that we can't afford at this time. So I don't know how to answer beyond that, but it's tight, but the city is working towards keeping it balanced.
Donna and I, and this is one thing that I definitely agree with, is that, this is Donna and I's, fourth budget? Is this the fourth one? And so we've had the pleasure, I suppose, of having gone through the process enough to where it's really evident that, the city's trying hard to be really efficient, and they're undermanned in some locations, our finance department being one of those. And so I think that they're doing really good with what they've got. So I'm not, I mean, last year we approved the addition of a couple half position spots because we just were undermanned. And so it's a problem, but they understand it. We have some restrictions as far as what we have for tax revenue, and we're going to do the best with what we got. So until we are in a better position, then we're just going to have to roll with it.
Okay. And I want to remind listeners, you can call in with your questions at 235-7721. You can also email info@kbbi.org. Please include your name with that email so we know who's asking the question, as well as listeners who call in. Please do provide whoever answers the phone with your name along with your question. And you know, you indicated that, you know, taxes are limited, and there's not exactly support for increased taxes to close any sort of gap. But you know, I heard David Lewis during the debate with Ken Kastner suggest you know, potentially other options is maybe finding a way to tax bear viewing operations. He mentioned that, although it doesn't sound like it might take care of the whole issue. But I mean, do you see other options like that, such as that, to find for more revenue for the city?
Any pretty much any option, any additional option is going to require help from somebody else, whether it's the borough, the state, or the feds. And you know, the borough tried to increase the sales tax cap last year. That didn't work. The voters didn't want to go for it. We asked, the city council asked Paul Seaton to evaluate, well, we asked our state legislators, I should say, to reevaluate the mandate on the senior property tax exemption, and that didn't go anywhere. The Kenai Peninsula Borough is assembly is currently not interested in entertaining a bed tax going to the voters. So those are some of the things that box us in. And so we can't do any of those on our own.
And I just want to touch on something there. You mentioned that the council did ask the state legislature to reevaluate the senior tax property tax exemption, but the borough does go above that state mandate of $150,000. Has the council asked the borough assembly to evaluate whether the borough might be willing to reduce its exemption?
Well, that's at the borough level. The city has the $150,000 tax exemption. So what the borough does not directly affect us, other than education and you know, other borough services. So the borough did look at phasing out that $300,000 down to $150,000. That went to the voters and did not pass.
Okay. And Heath, did you have anything to add on the idea of finding more revenue streams? Or?
Well, I mean, that pretty much covers the gambit. You know, in relationship to what David Lewis said with the bear viewing, I mean, there is a loophole in the tax code that they weren't willing to close at the borough level. So, you know, there's too much outside of our control in order to really kind of effectively make change in the things that Donna mentioned. And in that regard, the bed tax also being one of those things. I mean, that has to be instituted at the borough level. So they're great ideas, but until something gets done at that level of government, we're pretty much out of the picture.
Okay. And we are going to take a quick break, and we will return in the studio with me, our Homer City Council members, Donna Adderold and Heath Smith. And while we are away, if you want to call in with your questions, you can certainly call 235-7721 or email info@kbbi.org. And you are listening to KBBI AM 890 Homer. I'm your host, Aaron Bolton, and this is The Coffee Table. In the studio with me, I have Homer City Council members Heath Smith and Donna Adderhold. Both are running for their second terms on the council. Both are running unopposed, short of a last-minute write-in campaign. But and if listeners do have questions, I want to remind you that you can call 235-7721 or email info@kbbi.org. And, you know, I wanted to turn to something a little bit more recent. On Monday, the City Council introduced a ban on thin, single-use plastic bags. And there was a lot of discussion on the previous ban that was put in place back in 2012 and then was subsequently overturned in 2013 by a citizens initiative. And Heath, you voted against introducing the ordinance, citing the referendum. You know, why shouldn't the council revisit the issue itself 5 years, 5 years later after the referendum?
Well, six people sat at that table and made that decision once for the community, and the community went through all, you know, the proper procedures to tell them that they didn't agree with that decision. And, you know, so there is a process, if that has in fact changed within the community, that somebody can do a ballot initiative, put it on the ballot, and say, hey, we're ready for this change. I'm just uncomfortable with us six telling the community that they got it wrong after they told the sitting council at that time that they got it wrong. And so the issue itself is has kind of played out. And that's not to say that other things haven't changed over time and we don't have new information. To me, that's the best option. And if they can garner the support and the votes and win over the 7% differential that existed during that vote last time, then let's do it. But until then, I'm just not comfortable telling the populace that they got it wrong. They're the same people that vote us into office, right? So I would like to see the voters have the option to do that instead of going through the whole upset the cart and that whole thing again.
Right. And Carolyn Venuti, who introduced the ordinance itself, indicated that she wanted the council to take this on, and rather than waiting to put it on the 2019 ballot, and you indicated that, you know, she definitely had time to get this issue on this year's ballot. And but would you support a special election if that's the route that things go, or should this issue wait until the 2019 election?
That would be a discussion for the council to have and decide. So I would leave it open to whatever came before us as far as giving us a compelling reason to do that.
Okay. And Donna, you didn't really express an opinion on the ban itself, but you wanted to continue the discussion with two public hearings instead of one as a way to get an idea of what voters want. Do you think the council should take a vote on the ban, or should this go back to voters?
I'm undecided on that aspect at this point in time. What I really want to hear from the public, from the voters, is, you know, What would you support? You know, would you support that being a ballot measure? What would you really like to see in that regard? If we vote on something, or if it's a ballot measure, do we have the ordinance as it's written? Is it right? Should it be different from what it is? I'm really interested in those kind of comments, so that whatever moves forward, if something moves forward, it really reflects the needs and desires of the community.
Yeah, and you know, Monday's discussion was really focused more so on the council taking this issue on after voters voted on the referendum back in 2013. But there was less discussion on the ban itself. Do either of you have a position on the ban itself or the ordinance kind of as written?
Well, I have. I guess, like I said, I want to hear more from people. The fact that plastics are a major issue in the marine environment is, you know, that's not questioned. And the federal government actually spends quite a bit of money trying to clean up our marine environment. So the best way to reduce that expense, that taxpayer expense, is to keep the plastics out of the ocean to begin with. And it starts with, you know, it starts at the individual household level and up to the municipal level and on up. So I do believe that our municipality has a role in that. What the community can actually bear at this time in terms of what we want, how we want to go about that. On Monday we received a number of emails regarding the plastic bag, the ordinance. And one of them, you know, was very detailed, had, you know, this is what I do not like about it. And those are the emails, those are the conversations I really like to have, because people are being very specific. They're not just saying, I hate this, I love this. You know, what about it do you not like? What about it do you like? What's, you know, is there a different way we should move? That kind of conversation is very helpful for us in setting policy for the city.
Okay. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, people getting specific. And Shelley Erickson did mention, you know, in Monday's discussion, as far as rather than just focusing on the bags themselves, that the kind of a larger garbage issue and how our disposal practices, more like you mentioned, at the household level, the personal choices that people are making for themselves. You know, and if this issue, if the council doesn't take action on this issue, or even if it doesn't go to a vote, are there other issues the council should be focusing on in this larger issue of trash and disposal that Shelley Erickson mentioned? I mean, do you think the council should have an eye towards that after this conversation is done?
Sure, each member of council can bring forward ways to deal with issues. I mean, the solid waste disposal is at the borough level, and I, you know, I was talking to a person yesterday evening, saying, you know, well, one of the issues is at the transfer stations, trying to get a bag into the receptacle, you have to be much taller than this individual was, and just getting a bag into one of the openings was difficult. So there's a number of different reasons that people might be leaving their bags around and things like that. So this is, you know, certainly something that we could work with the borough on.
And Heath, I mean, did you have a position on the ban itself, or the ordinance kind of as written?
Well, at this point, I'm inclined to support the voice of the people. And the voice of the people spoke at one point, and if it's going to be reversed, then they need to speak again. And like Donna mentioned, and I'll bring up, is out of curiosity, I went back and I read the minutes from the meetings back in 2013. And what really kind of struck me was that the majority of people that testified in council chambers were in favor of it. And then when it went to the vote, it was something completely different. So, you know, I'd really like to encourage people to kind of show up and be a part of the conversation, so that when council makes a decision, it really is reflective of what our community wants. And so that we don't maybe have to go through some of the more difficult stretches of making those decisions.
Right. And, you know, there have been a lot of disagreements on council and in town, and even outside of city limits, over the role of the council, and bring this up because of the discussion about the proposed bag ban. You know, it's the second time the issue has come up, and supporters of the 2013 referendum that overturned the original ban argued that it wasn't the role of the city council to protect the environment. And some have argued the council and mayor should not wade into social issues, you know, during the recall effort in 2017 or even earlier this year when Mayor Brian Zack proclaimed June Pride Month. You know, and I know these are different issues, but do you think people's idea of what the role of council is, what it should be considering, is changing, or is it like you mentioned, Heath? Is it just a matter of getting enough people to show up to kind of express the diversity and opinion on over certain things?
Well, one of the things that you say is diversity of opinion. And if we're going to be respectful of diversity, then we have to take into account when we do what we do from council that there that diversity exists. And so the way that we do and say things can't be punching either side in the mouth, because that's going to get the kind of response that we have been getting. So I think as we move forward and we work together, that what we bring to the table can be respective and reflective of those two sides. And I think that we can achieve much of the same thing that is the intent of what we're doing without having to do that. And so I think it's the more collaboration and understanding that is put into the process, I think the better product we're going to get.
And Donna, did you?
I don't think that the city council should shy away from bringing up difficult issues or social issues. The government at any level is what we as people, I mean, what the democracy is all about, is what we want government to do in common for everybody. So bringing things forward and having a discussion about them is how we do things at the city council. And so, I believe that any council member can bring forward anything, allow the discussion to happen at a city council meeting, and then we make a decision. And, we have a very diverse community. That's what makes it the great community that it is. And we also have people who are not afraid to speak out, and I really appreciate. We also have a diverse council, and I firmly believe that that council should be diverse. It should represent multiple voices so that we can have a really good debate and discussion at the council table of what we should pass, what we shouldn't, how we should represent our community.
Okay, and we have just a few minutes left, so I did want to offer just a closing statements or any other issues that we didn't discuss that you guys would like to bring up. Or actually, before we get to that, we do have someone on line one. Carl, go ahead. You are on the coffee table.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. It's a little bit about economic development with Asia. And Homer being the center of, let's say, the center of Alaska as far as coast goes. And there's 45 countries in Asia, and quite a few of those countries are part of the Polar Partnership countries. And they're countries that want to have an active observation role in the poles and in the Arctic. And, you know, with our harbor expansion and what's going on out on the spit right now, where the old wood chip facility was, creating a building kind of like the Spark building, but only for industrial manufacturing, for building polar partnership vessels right here in Homer, maybe a 100-foot class of vessel that's designed for navigation in the ice. There's a huge shortage of vessels, especially modern contemporary vessels, that are capable to navigate with the high requirements that are needed for vessels that are going to operate in the poles. And it's quite possible that these polar partnership countries, Singapore, China, Japan,
I don't mean to cut you off, but could you get to your questions just because we have just a few minutes left?
I would ask our council members to see if they would be in support of developing an international polar partnership center out on the old wood chip facility for building polar partnership vessels with other countries.
Artie.
Thank you.
Artie, thanks, girl. All right. Does anyone want to take that on in just the brief moments we have?
It's a very interesting proposition, and it would certainly require the support of our marine trades. We couldn't, the city could not do something like that on its own, and it would need to go through the Port and Harbor Commission. So I would say that would be the first place to start on that topic.
Okay, and I wanted to get to closing statements. We have just about 4 minutes left. Whoever wants to go ahead and...
Very good. Well, just thanks for having us on the program today. The most important thing for me is just kind of moving forward. And, I mean, that's what we have to do. That's what we have ahead of us. And there's a lot of meaningful things that we can accomplish with the city. We've got some tough fiscal challenges, but we're going to make it happen. We have a very good staff in place at the city of Homer, and they work diligently in executing all the things in our favor. So, but at the end of the day, I hope everybody turns out to vote on Tuesday and take your friends with you.
Yeah, I thank you for providing this forum. These are so important so that the voters in the community can really understand who's on the ballot and hopefully motivate people to get out and vote. So this has been good. Thank you for the questions.
Great. And we did get not a question earlier, but more of a statement. It says from Bob and Barbara Howard, Donna and Heath, be proud of your first term achievements and thank you for stepping up once again with your focus on quality public policy. And thanks to your families for sharing you with the community. And thanks to KBBI for programs such as Coffee Table. I did want to fit that in before we signed off. Thanks for joining us. We had Heath Smith and Donna Adderhold. Both are running for their second terms on Homer City Council. I'm your host, Aaron Bolton, and thanks for joining us on the Coffee Table.